courage, and commitment to truly independent press by donating during our winter pledge drive from February 9th through the 22nd. It is with your generous financial support that WPFW, this emancipatory educational media outlet, continues to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Gross, the host of the Don't Forget the Blues Hour, you are tuned to member-supported WPFW in Washington.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
This is the place where sports and politics collide at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW. I'm Dave Zirin, joined by the one and lonely, my God, what a week it's been. One and only, it feels lonely sometimes these days politically, one and only 10-year NBA vet, multiple-time author, intellectual, poet, analyst, Etan Thomas. Etan, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
Man, I'm surviving, if not thriving. Yo, we've got a special guest at the bottom of the hour. Before we say anything about the many things we need to discuss, Etan, let everybody know who's coming on.
We're going to have Khalil Ismail coming on. He's a singer, producer, and social change activist. Great brother. I've known him for a long time, so definitely interested in our discussion later on.
Yeah, I am too. So this is where sports and politics collide. And we know that our brains, the world is dominated by things that have nothing to do with sports. But there are two big inflection points, Etan, that I'd love to get you. And they're so intense, I'm not even sure we can get to them both, even though it's just two things. But we'll do our best.
Okay.
The first is quite literally, to me, the most shocking sports moment, pure sports moment, not talking about death, pure sports moment since Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson.
Dang, and that's a lot.
Yeah. No, I still remember that. That was the days before social media. I remember it was a news flash in my dad. You know, I was with my dad and it was a news flash and I almost fell on the floor. Like the Mike Tyson losing to Buster Douglas, who was 42-1 underdog. That was one thing. And then you got the Luka Doncic trade Saturday night, a trade nobody saw coming. Luka to the Lakers for Anthony Davis, other players thrown in, considered. My goodness, CBS Sports gave that trade an A-plus for the Lakers, an F for the Mavericks. You don't trade stars like Luka, but more importantly, I think, all of the quote-unquote NBA insiders, all of the players, for goodness sakes, Jason Kidd, the coach of the Mavericks, Luka Doncic himself, LeBron James, who we thought ran the Lakers? Nobody saw this coming. Everybody thought the news was the result of a hacked email or a fake X account, something. And yet here we are, the Luka Lakers. 25 years old, Luka is. Five-time first-team All-NBA already. And he goes to the Lakers of all teams. So much to unpack with this, but I'd like to start with this, Etan. When you heard the news, what were your immediate thoughts?
Well, I mean, it was shocking because nobody expected it. But I don't think this is an F for Dallas. I don't know if I can agree with that. I'm looking at their roster, and, you know, AD is going to be playing the four. You know, I like Lively a lot at the five. You know, so he's going to be probably a little bit healthier. He's usually healthier when he's playing the four, so he doesn't have to, you know, do five things, which is center thing. I mean, and Kyrie coming in and throwing lobs and having the option to throw it to both of them. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as an F for Dallas. But I don't think it's
an F either for Dallas. That was just quoting the CBS. No, I really don't think. But at the same time, like, you just say the words. They traded Luka. I mean, this is the sort of thing that can destroy a fan base. I mean, there have been demonstrations in Dallas. Think of everything that's happened in the world. And there have been demonstrations in Dallas, graffiti everywhere. I'm going to tell you, Etan, I think this is like the greatest diss in sports history. Dallas not wanting to be in the Luka business. Luka had just bought a massive house in Dallas, and it was like a big story, like, I'm making roots here. That was the previous week. And as many people have reported, because they traded him to the Lakers, he's no longer eligible for a Supermax contract. It's costing him an ungodly amount of money due to this trade. A lot of people, Luka, the word is Luka cried. Kyrie Irving, I don't know if you saw his quote. He said, we're still grieving. I mean, this is really something. You trade a guy like this. Why do you trade a Luka? We could get to more about AD and how he fits in, because I agree with you that the Mavericks are kind of frisky and interesting with this lineup. But why do you trade a Luka Doncic?
Well,
it's never really happened before of a player of his caliber at his age.
Well, there's a few things that you know, stepping away emotionally from it that has been expressed. One, you mentioned before that the Supermax, and that's a lot of money to commit to someone. And the reasons that they gave was, you know, defense. They said defense wins championships. They don't think that they could win defensively with Luka, even though he got him to the finals. But, you know,
just last year.
I know. I'm just telling you that's what I said. This is what has been said. That is really what but then they kept talking about his conditioning. And I don't know. I mean, they kept saying it. And, you know, he got up to 270 pounds and, you know, things like that. And I saw him in the video when he first got to LA and he's coming out the plane. And, you know, I'm not an expert on guess your weight or anything like that, but he didn't look 270 pounds to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Something else must have happened that we don't know about, obviously. You know what I mean? There's something else. But how do you, let me ask you, because how do you see him and LeBron working out in LA? Because that's where I kind of have questions about. Now, yeah, if you have a centerpiece for after LeBron leaves, and you can continue and build everything around Luka and everything like that. But for the immediate, with LeBron and Luka pairing together, how do you see that working?
Well, I love the idea of getting to that. And let's start with that. And then after that, I do think we got to go through some theories, some thinking about why Dallas would make this move. Because as you said, I feel like the theories they're putting forward make no sense, because even the contract, like, I saw one sports economist said Luka himself is worth like $1 billion in equity. And that's if they don't get a new stadium. And now the fan base is in full revolt. But LeBron and Luka, first of all, a fun stat for you, Etan. Mm-hmm. They are the first two teammates in history to have career averages of 27, 7, and 7. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, two guys like that. But this is also the first time in LeBron James's utterly brilliant 21 year career that he is being asked to play a second fiddle type position. They're basically asking LeBron to be Mr. Miyagi to Lucas Daniel-san. Like, LeBron is going to get him in shape. LeBron's going to show him how to take this seriously. And what I wonder, Etan, does LeBron want that? Because that would effectively be, let's be frank, that would then be the last chapter of LeBron's career as a Mr. Miyagi to Luka Doncic, as the second dude on a team he brought to a championship 5 years ago. Does LeBron want that for himself? Because you know and I know that there's no player more conscious of his own legacy, of his own arc. Like, LeBron sees his career like a movie. Does he want this to be his Hollywood ending as effectively a player coach for this dude?
Well, I mean, you could look at it like that, or you could say if Luka gets in LeBron type shape and eats whatever LeBron eats and yes. does whatever LeBron does and has that type of a physique and you see him playing, it would make Luka from where he already is to a whole nother stratosphere.
Yes.
And if they credit LeBron for that, then that's adding to his legacy. You know what
Very
I mean?
Very good point. Yeah.
So I think that would be a definite plus. I mean, but could you imagine Luka on, you know, I mean, because honestly, right now, let's be honest, Luka is not the best defender. Okay.
No. Like,
if you had to criticize one thing about his game, it would be defense and probably whining to the refs. Those would be my first, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if he has improves his defense and his physique and everything like that, and he's able to move differently and everything, I mean, I think that would be amazing. I think that would be dangerous. But, you know, but it's just as far as now, because right now they're both, they play the game at their own pace right now. Luka plays the game at their own pace, at his own pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at their roster, and I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be as successful, you know what I mean? I saw they just traded. They just did a trade and they got Charlotte. I can't think of
the brother name. Mark Williams.
Right. No, Mark Williams, but they got the other guy from Charlotte. The five man.
Isn't that Mark Williams?
That's Mark Williams. Okay. All right. I might mention
that. Yeah.
So they got Mark Williams. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't watched Charlotte much this year. You know what I mean? Mm. So I'm not really familiar with his game. But I know they need a five. You know what I mean? I know they need some to fill in what Anthony Davis was doing. You know, I see Dwight campaigning for himself. You know what I mean? To get picked up. But I know they need a five. I know, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see what it looks like once they're on the court. But I do have questions. I do about how it's going to work out.
Just because nobody watches Charlotte, all due respect, LaMelo Ball, Mark Williams has played 23 games this year. That's not good, but 16 points, 10 rebounds, 59% shooting, 78% from the line, went to Duke. So dude can play.
Okay.
And yeah, but 23 games, you know, that's what makes you, I think, a little bit concerned, the injury history. I just like Luka, ball dominant. LeBron, ball dominant. It's like Kyrie was somebody, this is Kyrie's offensive genius. He could play off the ball or be the guy who's the central creator. Mm-hmm. And I just think without LeBron is not going to be content to be Dalton Connect. You know, he's not going to be content to just stand there and hoist threes either if Luka's dominating the ball. I worry about it very much. LeBron is saying all the right things. We know he's been a fan of Luka for a long time. He's always said admiring things. But let me ask you this. You're LeBron James. Mm-hmm. Your career is almost over. Let's be honest. I know you don't want to. No one wants to even predict or bet against him. But come on now. Mm-hmm. All right. Would you rather end your career with the Lakers, Mr. Miyagi-ing it a little bit with Luka, or on the Golden State Warriors, going out like the Expendables, going out like the Wild Bunch with Steph and Draymond.
I think he could play longer doing the Mr. Miyagi, to use your analogy, with Luka. He could probably stretch that out for another 10 years,
to be honest with you.
You know what I mean? He could set the record for the longest professional athlete ever.
Ever. Tom Brady is his new goal.
be 50 playing ball, you know? I mean, so I could see that. But, yeah, no, it's definitely two different roles.
It's two different roles. It's a wild scene. Yeah. So here's the thing. I mean, obviously, you know, the GM of Dallas, Nico Harrison, is basically in witness protection right now because of some of the rage in Dallas and the rest of it. There are a couple of things about this that I wanted to just raise with you. Mm-hmm. I think this is just what I think. I think Nico Harrison's a smart dude. And I think that he is being asked right now to take all the heat for this as if it was all him.
Mm-hmm.
When I see behind the scenes, Dallas Mavericks owner Miriam Adelson, who has been quiet. Folks who don't know, Miriam Adelson, big Trump supporter, big owns casinos all over the world, like super duper rich style. And we also know that she owns a great deal of Las Vegas. We know she wants a team in Las Vegas. We know she wanted a casino for the team to play in Dallas. And the state legislature basically were like, no, we're not legalizing gambling. We're not giving you subsidies, all the rest of it. So is Miriam Adelson tanking the team in order to move them to Las Vegas? I don't know. That's just a theory.
I have to disagree with that one, because if that's the case, they wouldn't. I mean, you look at the pieces that they acquired. I don't think that at all, because I think they're going to have a good product on the floor once they bring everybody back and they're playing. I mean, I think they look pretty good. So I would have to say I definitely disagree with that one. But I do understand the theory, because everybody's trying to make sense of trading somebody of Luka's caliber. But like I said, I think that Dallas, once they see everybody on the floor, I think Dallas fans will come right back and they'll be fine. You know what I mean? I think it'll go through a period of time where definitely they're upset because Luka is that special player. But, you know, fans get over things quick when they see winning. And I do think that it's going to work. Now, I could be completely wrong, but I see the Kyrie coming in and creating and, you know, AD and how he's utilizing him. And the young big man that came over from the Lakers, I like him too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Max Christie.
Yeah, he looked good. So
yeah, he's a good player.
Hey, we gotta take a break. We do gotta take a break, and we'll get more. There's so much more. This is like a day where we need more than an hour. You know,
seriously, this is a 3-hour show.
It really is, because there's a lot that I want to talk about. But let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
Given this. Whoa, Etan, are you still there, buddy?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come back in here. We're still on the air. And
oh, okay. No break?
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
The computer, for some reason, is freezing up on me, but it's playing now.
Oh, we got music playing
now. Okay, we can hear it, though. Okay.
Yeah, we can't hear it. My bad. I didn't see you on the Skype. That's why this culture lukewarm, intoxicated with ignorance. Let me spit the truth on. I said that glorifying murder in our music is bad. Now people coming at me saying, stop speaking up. We like to hear that. If that's your preference, that's cool. But when you get on the defense, then let me know. My spirit irritating your demons. I'm supposed to back down because of some internet hatred. I've been defeating Goliath, baby. My first name, David. All year round, we feed people death and destruction, you heard me? But it's okay, because on Thanksgiving, we...
Never mind. People threaten to hurt me. People say I'm clout chasing. They want the evil on the poles, huh? That sound like Satan. But I'm responding with love, maturing as I go through this. It ain't just about how I love Jesus, it's about how well I love Judas. They can't silence my voice. I'm gonna be vocal forever. These people hating on you, D, they gonna be local forever. I got the industry shook. That guilt can't pile up. I drew a line in the sand and it messed they amp pile up. I ain't here to blame it or shame it, but it's all about how you frame it. Now evil has an excuse, and it's called entertainment. You got a three-part ecosystem. The labels are one, but without creators and
amazing. Etan Thomas, that song has your fingerprints all over it. What were we listening to, sir?
That was a young cat named D1. D1, talented young cat. So, yeah, but you know what? I want to ask you this. I know this is a little pivot, but I didn't have internet this morning, so I missed a lot of different stuff, but I just saw this come across. I know you probably want to talk about Jimmy Butler. I know there's so much more NBA, but I want to get your take on this real quick.
Please.
You know, we don't have that long before Khalil comes on, but I just want to get your take. Because this topic came up last weekend at my daughter's volleyball tournament. I heard a lot of them talking about it. And Trump signed an order banning trans women from competing in women's sports. And this is a very interesting topic. I saw the flip pass and saw the image. I guess there was Trump signing the thing with all the girls around them. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
What is your thoughts on this? I know we have, you know, different perspectives on, but what are your thoughts on this?
Well, but let's be clear about some of this stuff. My number one perspective is that this is a problem in search of this is a solution in search of a problem.
Okay.
Trans women, first of all, trans people in general, 1% of U.S. society, mm-hmm. People who are assigned male at birth, who become trans women who want to play sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about like zero, according to statistics in most states, one in Utah, who is like a youth person. And they always grab the one who is performing at a high level and turn it into a profound scare thing. And oftentimes also we know historically that when they do these kinds of gender tests historically, gender questions historically, it always falls disproportionately on Black women who don't meet the standards of what they call a woman in these cases. That's like long history.
Testosterone levels and things of that nature.
Yeah, they talk about that. And also they used to gender test when they used to do this, this is back in the Olympic days, when they would do these gender tests of all women athletes, they found out that a lot of people, like gender, all of that testosterone, as you said, it's not binary, where you have one level for women and one level for men. And they stopped doing it because a lot of women athletes were finding out that they had attributes to their natural, and I want to repeat the word natural, body chemistry that put them on a spectrum that they were embarrassed to be on, ashamed to be on, and it exposed that the binary doesn't work. Now, I do get the fears of people with daughters in sports, particularly contact sports. They imagine pain being brought onto them. They talk about unfair advantages. But to me, this is like classical Trump, both scapegoating and the ongoing thing, which we just don't see with this issue, but also with issues of immigrants, his constant invocation of the rapist coming into this country, this kind of defense of white women that you and I know, studying history, always has a body count when people like Trump invoke it to the public. So I guess that's my take.
Interesting. So for me, when I was listening to all the girls talking, it was just more at a very elementary level because the girls are young. And
sure,
you know, our program, Maryland Juniors, they have boys teams, right? So my daughter, baby Sierra, is 14. So she plays on the 14s, and the boys 14s play on the court, you know, a little bit further down. And looking at them, and my daughter's team is good. Like, they just won gold.
Well, I've seen yeah. some clips. Man.
Yeah, they're good.
It's real.
Yeah, but there is no way that they even can begin to compete against the boys team. Like, it's the level of athleticism is on a completely different stratosphere. And, it, you know, just watching them, I'm like, wow, why are they jumping so high? You know, it's just different. So I'm listening to their conversation, and they're like, well, yeah, if, you know, they're talking about hypotheticals, and they're like, okay, well, if you know, one of them are transitioning or something like that, and they said they was at one tournament, and they had a boy that was transitioning and everything like that, and their athleticism was so much on a different level than everything else. And they were like, okay, this isn't quite fair because we can't compete against. And that was more of the discussion. And I not testosterone level and everything else in the you know, it was just on that level. And I'm listening to them talk, and I'm like, huh. So what would be the solution? You know what I mean? For someone, an athlete who is transitioning, you know, what would be a workable solution of where, and they wanted to continue to play. They love the sport, whatever sport it is. What would be the solution?
It you know, and it's like, I think that's an really interesting question. And so let me first say my pie in the sky solution, which I know isn't going to happen, but I do think it's worth raising, which is, do we need to rethink how we necessarily even divide people when we play sports? Are there other ways we can do it so it's more inclusive? Like, so you don't have somebody who could potentially it just be out of sorts with them playing in terms of, you know, advantages that come with or the like. But is there a way that we can think about ways so we're all included? Because the alternative then becomes banning people from playing. The alternative is giving Trump the high road on an issue that I'll repeat is a solution in search of a problem.
But what would be an example of a different criteria? What would be an example of that?
Oh, that's also a great question. There are leagues around the country that do this. I mean, it's very, very low level. I've got somebody at The Nation right now. My intern is actually researching an article on that very thing about local leagues that are figuring out how to do it. Obviously, it's mostly in cities and places that, you know, are more friendly environments. You know, it's going on in Atlanta. It's going on in Brooklyn. It's going on in Southern California, some other spots too. But it's this effort to try to make sure that some people aren't like legally, because that's what we're talking about with Trump. Like, it's one thing if like a league gets together and says, this is what we want to do. But like a federal dictate saying that a population can't play if they want to play, that's a very tough bridge to cross.
So let's talk about like this, as far as, you know, because sometimes I think you have to divide individual sports to team sports, right? So say you have a track. So somebody who is a sprinter, right? Would there be any issue with them competing against other boys, like naturally? Okay, I got you. I'm trying to think of how to phrase it because I don't
want to. No. I know exactly where you're going with this.
Would there be any issue with them competing against other boys in the individual sports?
Well, you mean against other girls, right?
No. I mean against other boys.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, right. Oftentimes when people do transition, and this is the way the Olympics does it, they're actually doing things with their body to actually like lower testosterone and get in a place where there is less of what would be the born physical advantages. And so I think that like, That's part of it that has to be judged. You know, it's like, but a lot of places don't have access to that level of understanding, testing. And I do worry about the scapegoating factor too, because, you know, with someone like Trump, you know, it never just stops with something like sports. And we're seeing that with the other executive orders. And they're trying to impose, it's not just about trans people, they're trying to impose their very fundamental ideas of womanhood and manhood with womanhood being basically in a birthing position. And men, mediocre white men, I should just say that, restoring the mediocre white man's place at the top of society.
This is an interesting conversation. This is a definitely a lengthier one to have. And I understand what you're saying as far as from the Trump perspective, but then I think about from, you know, my daughter's volleyball team's perspective and their conversation, and they're not, sure. That's not their end goal. That's not the way they're just looking at it as, wow, these boys are way more athletic than us. How can we compete against them? Do you know what I mean?
No, I like, got it.
That, and from that level, so let, I know we done came up, you know, this, like I said, this is a different show where we need 3 hours, but let's take another quick break. And you know, I'm excited to talk to this brother. He is a dear friend of mine and somebody who I really respect. So let's go to break and we'll be right back with Khalil Ishmael.
They'll tell you that you can't make it. That you began life's test with an F pasted to the top of your exam in bright red ink. They'll show you links through studies and statistics, lifetime sentences, force feeding you with both facts and fiction, aimed at predicting the outcome to your destiny as if they can see into your future and as if God created you to fail.
Man up! Your father, Papa, son. They are shooting at us. They are shooting at us. Man up. The father, Papa, son. They are shooting at us. They are shooting at us.
Calling all my brothers, can I get a quick huddle? Time out for a second, need to address some trouble. See so many of us on a stumble. No goals, no direction, so affected by the slow, subtle devaluation of our roles. Nobody to teach us, took the poppers out the homes. Left to learn alone what it means to be a man. So it's easy for the media to carry out their bigger plan.
We're back on the collision where sports and politics collide, and we didn't even get to the obscenity of Donald Trump being at the Super Bowl, given the way he dragged NFL players 8 years ago. An absolute obscenity. But I'll take it to you, Etan Thomas. Who is our guest? Give them some background. And perhaps before you do, give our listeners a sense of what we were just listening to, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure. That was attracted me and this gentleman did together, Khalil Ishmael. He's a singer, producer, and social change activist. That track was called Man Up. You know, he's known for his passionate, soulful songs and performances. And, you know, he's somebody who is he's about the business. And we could tell the story of how we connected here a few days ago, maybe a week or two ago. But I really respect him a lot. So I want to jump right into it. Khalil, are you there, sir?
Hey, I'm here. How's everybody?
Oh, man, it's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Let me tell a quick background. I have been, you know, since the passing the on our show here, since the elections, since everything, it's been a tough one. And it's been something where I personally have been, and we talked about it, I think, the week before last, where, you know, I'm looking at this group. Look, this is what you voted for. You know what I mean? Are you happy now? Type of a thing. Like, you know, whether it's white women, whether it's black Trump supporters, whether, you know, anybody. And Khalil reached out to me and we had a great conversation. And I don't want to ever come across where I'm not sensitive to the part about Palestine. And it's one of those things where, and we talked about this the other weekend, I think, you know, maybe a week or two ago, where you're looking at everything and you're looking at where Trump is taking everything and you have such frustrations, you know, whether it's talking about non-voters as well and third party voters as well, different people that I've talked about. And Khalil made some great points to me. And I never want to go come across, especially on the topic of Palestine, that it's not understandable why it was difficult for people to cast their vote for anybody even associated with the Biden administration, especially when they didn't do anything to distance themselves from funding a genocide. But Khalil, I'll stop talking and give you the floor.
No, I mean, you said... essentially what I was saying, and that, and maybe you can question it more, but essentially, and my observation is that one, especially the, I spoke to a lot of youth around the election who did not vote for Biden simply because of that. And these youth, these people were not from Gaza. They were white. They were black. They're 20, 22, 23. You see what I'm saying? And they just literally couldn't deal with what they were seeing. Right. And they're not really educated politically. Right. Because they don't even have the time. And even if they had the reference. Right. They have the reference of what Trump is. They don't have the experience to go along with it. Right. So essentially what I was saying is that we're in a time now where we all know, we all talk about the lesser of evils, but it's not just the lesser of evils. It's really two great evils. Right. So when I say that, I mean, I just can't, like, I remember the statement, Israel has the right to defend itself, right? And I remember that statement from this administration during the time when they were advocating for their presidency. And that was, and that's their starting point. And just that statement, without context, it's just pure evil. It's not even that, and it's not evil because it's all false. It's evil because what you're doing is you're setting the stage for the status quo to continue. And so for some people, it's like anything but the status quo, and they can't see more. So my point really was that if we continue on this, okay, well, now you see what he's doing versus a, there are some people who are literally like, listen, I'll deal with the discomfort. The other people have the mentality of, listen, I'd rather see the person coming. Now, I agree that it might be people don't realize what's actually coming, right? It's kind of immature, but that immaturity probably comes from heart, right?
Yeah, great point. I want to throw this in, Khalil, because I just sent this to Etan this morning. News that broke this morning. I know that we've all heard after Donald Trump said he was going to clear out Gaza, totally ethnically cleanse it, push out all the millions of people. And about now, of course, Egypt is like, oh, hell no. Saudi Arabia is like, oh, hell no. You know, huge response from people who Trump wants to see as allies are saying, hell no. And I'm reading this article, and at the end of it, it says, an Egyptian spokesperson said that Joe Biden was pursuing the same plan, but doing it behind closed doors. And I'm just like, wow, because I think something we've all seen recently after Trump said that thing about the mass displacement is a lot of liberals being like, I hope you're happy now, Dearborn, Michigan. I hope you're happy now, Palestinian rights activists. Look what happened. You know, you didn't vote for Biden and now you're going to get this mass displacement. But Biden was pursuing it anyway, just in secret.
And this is exactly a perfect example of what I'm saying. And what happens is some people would rather take the discomfort up front. Some people are like, listen, I'll deal with that. They don't know what the discomfort is. Nobody does. And nobody wants to deal with that, right? And I would even say for myself, like, I'm not, like, what Trump is doing affects me greatly. I work in a lot of human services with a lot of nonprofits and with a lot of people who benefit from what's going on federally. But at the same time, at some point, like, for me, I look at the psychology of people. What motivates us to actually figure out how to build something despite who is in power? Because it appears is that we tend to get lulled to sleep when our favorite ones are there. Like, we just don't have the same motivation to do what we need to do for ourselves.
Good point. I definitely can't disagree with that at all. I mean, and I have seen some aspects of what you're referring to today as far as the liberals who said, you know, it's interesting. There's one guy that I, in particular, I'll call him by name because I did retweet him, but Alex Cole. You know who that is, Dave?
No, break it down, please.
Okay. Alex Cole, he's, you know, one of the people that are always, you know, tweeting on social media and talking about things with the Trump administration and pointing different things out. And you can tell he has the anger. And I have also expressed to certain groups, like white women, this is what y'all voted for. Y'all have, you know, I have done that. I'm guilty of that as well. Black Trump supporters, you know, y'all have that. But on this topic, it's different, you know, because it's, I understand why, and I never want to come across like that, like I don't understand why it was difficult for anyone who is even remotely looking at this Palestinian human rights struggle that is going on, this genocide, this ethnic cleansing, to say, wait a minute, this is not any better, you know, this option, you know, and they were waiting, everyone was waiting for Kamala Harris to distance herself from it. And I thought that she was for a second there.
Mm-hmm.
I know because she said she wanted a ceasefire. I was like, okay, that's great. All right, okay, we need to stop this war now. Okay, that's great. Then a few days later, then she repeated that phrase, Israel has the right to defend itself. I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Because that's like that means, and at least that's what it said to me, that while you do say all this different stuff, you're going to do the same thing that Biden did as far as give him the same funding, give him the same everything like that, while maybe verbalizing the humanity of the Palestinians, but then doing the same thing, which ends up kind of canceling each other out. It doesn't mean anything if you're still going to fund the whole thing. But people like Alex Cole, he said, I have zero sympathy of the Palestinian Americans who stayed home or voted for Trump, you get what you deserve. And I was so surprised they didn't even say that. You know, Chuck, you know, our other co-host, Chuck tweeted him as well and said, like, that's disgusting. I can't even believe that you said that. He said, this is truly a sickening tweet. But I've seen a lot of that, and I definitely don't want to go into that category. Not with genocide. You know what I mean? Not with ethnic cleansing. Not with the murder. That's... You know, both options, you have to be honest, were not good for Palestinians.
Right. And for me, like, that's actually a symbol of not just what's going on in Palestine, but what has happened historically here with Black people and even poor white people. Right. And even people who are marginalized in different sections. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to look at, okay, what? So when I looked at the statistics, for example, Black people disproportionately killed by police. And I looked at the statistics of people being deported. And I looked at the statistics of people who are still incarcerated in the last 4 years versus the 4 years before that. There's very small percentage differences, right? Mm. So it's not even that. So what I'm saying is that what we talk about is destabilization, it's actually here already. It's just only here for certain people. And so the people who maybe are not destabilized or not affected don't recognize that for some people, they don't have anything to lose by going another direction because it's already happened to them or their family members or their loved ones, not just with Palestine. That's just the blatant. The reason I like to use that is because I think with the reason I utilize Palestine is actually because it was so in your face this time versus, but this has happened many times before, but the way it was displayed on social media, the amount of time, the people who came out and, you know, even like what happened with Ta-Nehisi Coates and him coming out and just kind of being a voice, this was a little bit different in terms of they got a different kind of attention, but make no mistake, there are little mini versions of Palestine still happening here amongst our people where the disparities haven't really changed, even though the rhetoric changes. Disparities haven't changed, and this is, I think, what Malcolm was talking about.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you just mentioned Malcolm, because what you were saying before really reminded me of one of the most famous Malcolm X quotes about, do you prefer being stabbed in the front or the back? You know, and the idea of at least seeing the person coming with the knife might be preferable than getting one in the back. It's difficult to not think about that. With what I just said before, it's on that I sent you this morning about this plan of mass displacement underway under the Democrats, you know, and I'm glad also that Khalil mentioned young people, social media, and how they get news, which is different than us. You know, we try to find angles. We might be watching it on cable. We're reading authors like Coates and trying to get a full sense of it. What they're doing is watching a genocide on their phone over the course of a year. And if people don't see the attendant trauma that can come with that, and then being told to vote for people who are arming the thing that they have been up in arms about for a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I do get it. And now we know that, you know, this lesser evil that people like Alex Cole is saying, ah, look, you know, this is what you get. Well, that's what they were going to get anyway, it looks like, if they had voted the other way.
Right.
So and also, frankly, the war would still be going on. Netanyahu called that ceasefire out of a favor to Trump so they could just sun the Democrats. You know, that's just some authoritarian love right there between them, because obviously, as we know, it hasn't really been a ceasefire at all. They're planning now for this mass displacement. So I don't know. There's a lot there that I think we need to understand. And frankly, Etan, I do think this is in a different category than saying something to, say, white women about voting for a rapist, voting for someone who wants to cut Title IX, and voting for things that and promotes things that actively harm women's health.
I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Khalil, I want you to talk about the work.
I wanted to say that I believe maybe a solution is to take this time to inquire why people voted, and give people, even who voted for Trump, a voice in wondering and asking why, because everybody's not a monolith there. And then maybe, because those people are going to be hurt by Trump too, right? Because we know what Trump is going to do. He's multiplying what he did last time, right? So most of people are going to be hurt in a couple of years. You know, that majority of people are going to be like, what the hell?
Right.
But there's an opportunity here, right? For those people who maybe were on the fence, who just went another way because emotionally they were so distraught because of what happened in Gaza. Or, you know, what is swept under the rug now, for example, I have a brother who is, you know, personally, I have a brother who's been incarcerated for 3 years without a trial. My own blood.
Wow.
Brother. Right?
Wow.
And this is still happening. This same thing that, you know, 13 was talking about years ago. People don't realize 400,000 people, this is still the status for them right now. Right.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is, and these policies, we know where we can trace some of these policies back to. And I'm not gonna be just carte blanche and just go the other way and be like, this is all Democrat. No. It looks to me like this is good cop, bad cop, two parts of the same, two heads of the same snake. You know what I'm saying? I can't help but think that.
And I'll definitely agree with that on this topic. Now, my issue is with some of the other topics, like you said, with white women, when you talk about the different people who are saying, well, you know, the Latinos for Trump crowd. And, you know, I'm from Oklahoma, so there was a large amount of them there. And then now that crowd is flip-flopped, like, wait a minute. You mean that because I'm born here, I'm not safe now? Just because my parents, you know, all the things that he said, he literally said this before. That still does frustrate me. I'm not gonna lie. The people who are now looking at their health care and they're saying, well, wait a minute now. My health care, my insulin is gonna start going up more. I thought he said that he was gonna. I was like, he lied. Like It infuriates me so much, the people that just believed everything that he sloppily said. Like, there wasn't even any substance behind it. He just said different things. And I said, oh, okay, well, he said the price of eggs will go down and groceries will be cheaper, and now I'm going to just, you know, support him. And I was like, that doesn't – how would he do that? You know, those are the people that really – for me, I can't even tell.
I got a question too, Etan. So here's – and this is what's confusing to me, right? So people will say – He's doing what he said he was going to do. And then at the same token, he lies like everybody else. And that's also confusing to people, because if his thing for people is he's actually doing what he said he's going to do, and in some places that's very bad, then they're also told to believe him in other things, you know, which is, again, naive. But what I'm saying is that it's not really strong to hold him to what he said he's going to do and then tell people he's lying here, right? Because the lying thing is what all of them do. If you, I hope you get what I'm saying.
That's true. But as far as immigration, from day one, and every time that he spoke, every time he said, this is what's going to happen. That should not be a surprise to anyone. And I'm talking to more of these people in Oklahoma, you know, because this is a big issue. Like my friend is a teacher, and he has he's at a school, and it's like 60-70% Hispanic, and they all had this big mass protest. And they're talking to him and telling them that, yeah, a lot of their parents, you know, voted for Trump. And I was like, why? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how did that happen? Yeah. You know, but before I know we're flying by, I want you to get to everything that you're doing before we have to let you go. Talk to me real quickly about A Call to Community, mobilizing our resources, documenting our legacy, securing our future. Talk to me about everything you're doing with that.
Ooh.
Okay. So essentially for the last 10 or 12 years, I've been working with an organization, called Keys, where we have been working with the youth in public schools in Baltimore City, primarily gathering data, also working with mental health providers and medical health providers to kind of understand what's been going on in our community, both policy-wise. We've done, you know, some of our partners have done work around the consent decree stuff. And what we're doing now is we're actually coming up to tell our story and our findings and try to galvanize people around what we can do, no matter what's going on, whatever's going on with the regime. We were going to do this, we were planning to do this before this regime changed. But the bottom line is, I think we're at this point now where, while regime change really looks bleak and bad, what has happened over the last, 20 years also, is you have seen almost a resurgence of independent, marginalized people being able to come up with their small businesses, being able to come up with an ability to kind of take care of themselves in small pockets. And what we want to do is kind of bring that together kind of in a think tank and say, okay, well, how can we merge our resources, especially with what's going on now? It's become more important. But it's just heightened what we wanted to do anyway around what can we do to combine the resources of small businesses, mental health professionals, medical health professionals, to be able to serve marginalized communities in such a way where we're not as dependent on the government, no matter what they do.
Wow, that's what that's powerful.
Community
work
is on February 20th, and it's based in literally on the ground work that we've done in the schools over the last 10 years.
Yo, forgive me if you said this and I didn't quite capture it. But is there a website people can go to learn more? A Facebook page, a IG page? How can people learn more?
So I just, I literally just put up, if you go to accessthevillage.org, right? The front page of it is there. I'm putting up the flyer for this particular thing today on that page. But you can kind of see information about what's going on at accessthevillage.org. If you want to see the last 10-year information, go to Keys and Powers, KeysEmpowers.org.
And say it one more time. Say it one more time for the listeners, both sites.
Say again?
Say it one more time. Just repeat it one more time for our listeners. I want to make sure they get it.
Okay, that's accessthevillage.org, you know, all spelled as one word, but spelled correctly. And then there's keysandpowers.org. Right. Those are the two places where you can see where we've done over the last 10 years at Keys and Powers, and Access the Village is essentially the site that's going to be used to kind of bring all of the organizations together.
That's what's up. Well, hey, look, you know the respect that I have for you, and much to say. And I appreciate you reaching out to me the way that you did, too, though. I think it's really important for brothers to be able to dialogue, especially when they have different perspectives or what is viewed as different perspectives. So I definitely appreciate that. But keep doing what you're doing. I know we're at the end of our show, but I just wanted to give you your flowers and tell you how much respect that I have for you and always have for it. I mean, I guess it's going on, we're going on 2 decades now? Good Lord. We're getting
man,
old.
It's crazy. Yeah. About 15 years, but, man. And listen, Ethan, I want to do more. We got it. I want to get back up for some more stuff, man. I've been thinking about you for a while, for some years, so.
Please do.
Definitely. Yeah. All right.
Yo, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I hope you come back, please. Seems like we have so much more to discuss.
Let me know.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'll let you know. Thanks again, though.
Okay.
Yep, I know we're at the end. Hey, I want to say real quick before we go, today would have been Bob Marley's 80th birthday. Rest in peace, Marley. So, Dave, go ahead and take us out.
All right, let's go out. Yo. This has been The Collision, where sports and politics collide. I'm listening to some Bob Marley as soon as we get off this call. That really moves me, Etan. I'm so glad you said that. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Four pirates, yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the end of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Whether it's the courage to tell the truth about displacement, apartheid, and genocide, or our commitment to presenting jazz and all of its extensions, as well as other liberatory musical forms, blues, hip-hop, house, WPFW has been an unwavering partner in the fight for social justice and the preservation of the culture. Now's the time for you to display your courage and commitment to truly independent press by donating during our Winter Pledge Drive from February 9th through the 22nd. It is with your generous financial support that WPFW, this emancipatory educational media outlet continues to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly 5 decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-800-222-2000.